275.
Okay, we are starting on 275 this week in Sefer Chinuch. This is October 22nd, 2012. And we're skipping over because I think we did those other ones, right?
We did. Because we were talking about something else.
So that's why we're just skipping. Okay, so we're starting with 275.
Here we are, back to our regular group. That didn't take very long.
Hopefully Rosalie is going to rejoin us, but she... Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Bob said she really enjoyed it.
Yeah, but she has... She delivers
for
the deli.
Bugs, by the way.
Oh, right. Sure. Yeah. She delivers for the deli, so she got called this morning. So we're going to do 275, 276, 277, 278, and that's all about Kohanim with blemishes. And the last one is in this group, because the next group is about Truma. Okay, so that a Kohen with a blemishing defect should not serve at the sanctuary.
What's with our obsession about perfection?
Yes.
What is that?
That is the theme of today.
It affects animals. Mm-hmm. It affects, it's not just this, but if you think about an animal, even with the slightest of imperfections.
Chef is a cow.
What is it?
Right. So let's look at that.
Isn't God supposed to be the only perfect
being? Yeah. So it's not about. So it's a blemishing defect, and nobody's perfect.
Well, and it's not even. I mean, a blemish. A blemish is. I don't know what that means.
Okay. So let's look and see what it means. You're so lucky. The Sefer Chinuch came to answer your question.
Thank goodness.
Okay. So the mitzvah is that a kohen with a disfiguring blemish should not take part in the service of the sanctuary, as it is stated. Any man of your descendants throughout their generation who has a blemish, let him not appear to offer let him not approach to offer the bread of his God. And we're going to look at 275 and 276 together. Because 275 is about permanent blemishes, and 276 is about transient blemishes. Mm-hmm. Neither one of them can offer, but they are different blemishes. But this mitzvah comes to include them both. I mean, I think it says in the counting of the Ramban, he puts them both together. But they're similar.
And it's going to describe what the blemish is.
Yes, it is. Okay, so now, blemish means, in essence, a permanent disfigurement. For it was so interpreted by the Midrash Sifra. Who has a blemish? Let him not approach. Thus I know only about permanent disfigurement. Where do I learn about a passing blemish? Scripture states, for any man who has a blemish shall not draw near. So we have two different things, two different statements.
Sources.
So we know one's permanent, one's passing. Permanent disfigurement, for example, a broken hand or a broken foot.
Broken hand, that's not permanent.
Well, not today, it's not. But today with surgery, you get your hand fixed.
But even without surgery, when I broke my foot in four places, it healed.
Well, it healed, but so this is talking about a broken hand or foot that you can see.
You can't do the blessings.
So it's not just about not doing it, it's about not looking good.
Mm. Yeah, it's about appearance. We're all talking about
it. It's
appearance.
We'll see. It is appearance. A passing blemish is, for example, a scurvy or a scab, which means a lichen. I don't know what that is.
Lichen.
Moss.
Well, so that's a moss today, but that...
I guess it would be
like a furry thing on the outside of your skin.
Like a psoriasis, sort of.
Something that you can see, right? Okay. Okay, here we go. Here's your answer. At the root of the precept lies the reasons that most actions of people are acceptable, appealing to the heart of those who see them, in accordance with the eminence of those who do them. Meaning, we human beings are very affected by appearance. Mm-hmm. When a man is distinguished in his appearance and good in his actions, he will find grace and good understanding with all that he does in the eyes of all who observe him. Should he be, however, the opposite of this, inferior in his form or peculiar in his limbs, then even if he is straight in his ways, his activities will not be so attractive to the heart of those who see them. Now just think about, and not speaking about politics, but just initial in the race, when people said, like, Mitt Romney, his only thing is that he looks so presidential. Well, so again, not commenting on personality.
Or Paul Ryan, who has a six-pack.
Right, but the point is there is a look, and people do look for looks.
They do.
But we're supposed to be so much... Yes, that's like the initial impression, but aren't we taught that we're supposed to look beyond those things?
But so the fact is that we're taught that, but we can't be that.
Good, let's go with that.
Look at this. Right. I mean... I have to tell you, there aren't very few people that are going to make this ad.
No. But this is a very important paragraph, okay? So let's continue on this. Yes, we are supposed to
transcend. Disturbing to me.
Well, let's look. Let's keep going, okay? It is therefore truly fitting that the messenger, on whom atonement depends, should be a man of grace, handsome in appearance and fair in features, and pleasing in all his ways, that the minds of men may be drawn to him.
Why?
And apart from this, it is possible that in the perfection of his form lies an intimation of matters through which, as a man's thoughts dwell on them, his spirit will be cleansed and exalted. Meaning it can bring you to a place. Seeing somebody so beautiful, so appropriate, can help you in your process. It is therefore not right in any way that there should be in him, the Kohen, any deviation in form from all his forms, meaning Hashem's. He should look as close to Hashem as possible, meaning as close to perfect as possible. Here. Hi. For fear that the spirit of the contemplator will be distracted on account of the peculiarity and will wander from the desired goal. So that's what it is, yes, we are supposed to transcend. Absolutely. We should not be taking the first impression of somebody's looks and going with it. And yet, it is a distraction.
It is.
It really is. I mean, I took somebody once, somebody who, is working on living independently, to the Center of Independent Living. So, and when we get there, a social worker comes over. So first a deaf social worker comes and talks to us. And then when it became clear that this person didn't need sign language, so then another social worker came over. That social worker was so, so compromised physically, it was hard to pay attention. Hard to believe that social worker had
a message. Really provide you.
He slid over with one foot dragging and his mouth was hanging. He said, and that's how he talked. But he had a master's degree.
Probably
it was
had a stroke.
It was a shoulder, but more than a stroke.
Exactly.
It's definitely more than that. But the point is, yes, I could transcend and say intellectually, I know this person has achieved a degree and has
the
knowledge
ability.
And has the empathy to work with somebody who's compromised because he himself deals with that. And yet,
on the other hand,
how distracting is it to have a social worker who can't speak to you clearly? You know, it was so distracting. So I had to use, instead of using my energy to try to figure out working with this person I had brought there, I had to use my energy to transcend my discomfort.
It is true.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's just, so that's what this is saying, is that human nature does take the physical into account. It really does. I'll just give you a silly little example. I hope no men listen to this tape. Right, so when I put on my stockings this morning, so I have a little hole in the very top. I'm thinking it's probably not going to run down. It's probably fine. I could wear it for today. But if it does, I'm in Denver with people who know me, and they'll still love me even if I have a run. I wouldn't put it on if I was traveling. I wouldn't have taken the risk.
Yeah.
And I thought about that. That was after I prepared this. And I thought about that. I thought, that's a perfect example of this. I'm taking into account...
Right.
I'm taking into account the physical appearance and the impact that it makes.
That it could have.
Yep. Right? And I certainly do want to have... I want to have an appearance that does not distract from my message, that helps carry it, but doesn't distract in any way. You know, not too pretty, not too ugly, not too fat, not too thin. Thin, too thin, I'm not worried about.
Right.
But you know what I mean? Like it has to be something that carries the message and doesn't distract.
True because when I first started public speaking and going to conventions and stuff, somebody told me, dress on the plane because you never know who you're going to run into that's going to be sitting in your class the next day.
Right.
Or taking your seminar.
Right.
Who might say...
She
really looked
on the plane.
Bad in sweats.
Right.
Exactly.
But so
I never,
to me,
hardly ever traveled.
I mean,
like that.
Yes, I would agree with what we're saying.
Yep. Jeans.
However, it seems to me there's we're now talking a big difference between perfection.
Oh, so it's not asking for perfection.
Well,
it's saying,
we're saying
there's
any
a list
level
of blemishes.
Of blemish.
Well, so it's going to give, of course, a list of blemishes.
Right.
And what
Hang
they
on,
are.
Sandy.
So it's not
Hang
any
on.
Level, and it is only ones you can see.
But there's only three kinds of blemishes.
Actually, there's 50.
Well, there's 50.
I haven't read that part.
Right. There's 50 divided into three major categories. So here are the three major categories. The ones that disfigure a Kohen from serving, and if they're an animal, they disqualify it from being brought as an offering. So that's one category that Kohanim and animals share. Right? So then an animal would not be able to be brought. Then there's other blemishes which disqualify only a man from serving, but not an animal for being offered up. And then there are blemishes which disqualify neither a man nor an animal, but impose restriction only for appearance sake. And any Kohen who has any one of these three kinds of disfigurements does not serve. None but blemishes that are open, visible, disqualify a man. But with defects in a body cavity, for instance, if one's kidney or spleen was removed or his viscera were perforated, even if he thus becomes fatally wounded. So an animal, for instance, that's fatally wounded but's going to live for another few days, you can't offer that up.
But
a Kohen who's fatally wounded but will still live for a few more days can still perform.
If you can't see it.
Right, if you can't see it. Right. And I don't know if you ever read the memoirs of Gluckel of Hamelin, which I highly recommend for every Jewish woman to read. But anyway, that's what happened to her husband. He died. He fell, and he got some kind of internal injury. And he died. It took a couple of weeks on a deathbed, but he died from that. But somebody in the beginning stages of that could still, even though you know, we can't do anything for you. We can't do surgery. We can't give you antibiotics. You're dead, right? In a couple of weeks, you will be dead. That's what they knew that, right? But for the first few days, he's walking around. Right? So for those days, if he could manage it, he could still work in the Mishkan, whereas an animal with that type of injury could not be offered. So it has to do with what you can see. However, if you can see it in other ways, like he's shaking or can't stand well, then I spoke to somebody who's expecting, who was so nauseous and so miserable before she showed. And she didn't want to tell anybody because she wasn't showing. And we have this thing about not telling before you're showing. I said, you're showing. Look at you. You're miserable. Your face is ash, and you're throwing up every 2 minutes.
Like, something's
going
on.
That's called showing, I think you could.
It's not just a physical showing.
It's not
right.
a tummy showing, but you're showing. Like, look at you. It's okay. You could get the support you need. Just tell somebody that you need help.
Elisa, it reminds me of a little bit of the kashrut of a cow.
Mm-hmm. With the lung.
The lungs.
The lung, the heart, walking to be shechted, if you have to schlep them to schlepping.
That's sort of a mouthful.
Then, you know.
Right, so that's about, are you fatally, are you healthy enough to live for a year? So that's a definition we have in kashrut. So we do have some crossover here. But a definition in kashrut will be a different definition than here. And I'm not sure if an animal has to be able to live for a whole year to be able to be offered. But I would imagine that if we are aware of an injury that is a fatal injury, so I think that's our definition of fatal. It's going to kill you within a year. Right, that's not an old age death. That's a death from the injury if it's within a year. So, and we do that, let's say, with the Aurora shooting. Like if somebody would be in the hospital for a month and then die, it would still be a murder from that. You know, mm-hmm. dying of injuries is still being killed mm-hmm. on the spot. It just took a month to die instead of a few minutes to die. So we do think about
all of these are not visible things.
So these are all not visible things, right? Right. A whole long list of things.
There's 140 that affect man, and there's a bunch of them where clearly you could argue that it wouldn't be visible.
Right, so it's interesting. There's a lot, and there are some things that are visible that do disqualify here on the account of their appearance. One whose eyelashes fell out, even if the hairs remained in their follicles, and one whose teeth were removed. So, I mean, just thinking of my kids who take the bus now, right? They don't like taking the bus because they say, nobody on the bus has teeth.
Lucky you. Lucky you.
Right. Mm-hmm. But there is something creepy about it. See, like, it's so cute in kids, so horrible in adults, right, to be missing teeth. So, and think about that 6-year-old. Look how adorable it is on a 6-year-old. And so not on a 60-year-old.
Yeah.
Not at all.
And especially in these days, like, who had teeth? Well, your front teeth you might have.
Right.
Yeah, but a lot of people, right. A lot of people, exactly.
Right. Yeah, people did lose teeth.
Didn't have clear choice or whatever it is.
Right. No, but I mean, they didn't have dental hygiene. They didn't, you know. Right.
But they didn't eat as much sugar as that either.
So wait, who? When you have the Kohen Gadol, and he's usually from, is he from birth? I mean, he's a Kohen.
He's a Kohen from birth, and okay. Gadol from choice.
Okay, so he's growing up, and he's becoming a man, and he's mm-hmm. headed in that direction. Who decides? Who, like, I can envision this guy standing naked with all these other guys
inspecting.
Around him, like, inspecting, you know.
To make sure he has none of these 140 defects.
Yeah. Yes. Look down to this last paragraph in 221. Let's see. Is that where it says it? No, it's not. It's probably in this one. Okay. Let's look at the end of 276 then, because it talks about... Okay, here we go. On page 223.
And among the laws, age, by the way, is one of them. If you
right, right,
if you're infirm, if you're infirm because of age.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Among the laws of, so we're on 223, the last paragraph, which is in the middle.
Among the laws.
Okay. Among the laws of the precept.
Typo.
Typo. There is what the sages of blessed memory said, that whether it is a permanent or passing blemish, it disqualifies as temple service, and the Kohen is given a whipping of lashes on its account if he performs service deliberately.
Okay.
Then there is what the sages of blessed memory said, that the great Beit Din would sit in the chamber of hewn stone at the sanctuary, and their principal activity continually was that they would investigate and examine the Kohanim in regard to lineage and blemishes. This is fascinating. Any Kohen found to be disqualified through lineage would wear black and wrap himself in black and go out of the temple court. So he makes a public statement.
Said I'm not.
I have been rejected according to my lineage. I'm dressed in black now, exiting this place that I can never go back into. So it's a very broad public statement. It's not a red A.
That's for a Kohen Gadol?
No, for a Kohen. A Kohen shows up, right? He's been raised. He's raised on the farm, whatever. He did everything. Now he's 18, 20, whatever, and he's showing up to the temple for his service. And he's first checked out. You can't just show up. You know, what if you're a reporter trying to do an article and see what it's like to be a Kohen? Ah, you first get checked out. So you go into the Lishka Gizit and they check you out and they first check your lineage. If your lineage is kosher, you're wrapped in white. If your lineage is not, you're wrapped in black. And then
they check you out
for the whites, right? Whoever is found to be sound and worthy in lineage would dress in white and enter and serve with his brother Kohanim. If one is found worthy in his lineage, but a blemish was discovered upon him, here's the interesting.
Yeah.
He would sit in the chamber of the wood and weed out wormy pieces in preparing piles of wood for the altar. So no worms in the wood that gets used in the altar. And it would be a Kohen's job to do
to
the separation.
Identify it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he would share in the holy offerings with the members of his father's house and eat as it is stated. So he's still in Tahara. He's still a Kohen. He still has a Kohanic job, but not a Kohen job that you can see.
Right.
Right, that changes how people feel. So you still serve as a Kohen, but in a more private way. And you're still in Tahara, so you still get to eat from the Korbanot. The remaining laws about all the blemishes are in Chapter 7 of the Talmud Tractate Bechorot, which is about animals, and it applies when the temple exists for the Kohanim. If one transgressed and served in the sanctuary with a passing blemish deliberately, he should be given whiplashes. And then this paragraph that says Rambam includes it in the other mitzvah. Right. So
there's like a pool of these young Kohanes, and there it's like, you know, what's that, you know, on the
like
TV
the
show?
Sorting thing.
One of the TV where it's weeded
like
out,
Harry
weeded
Potter,
out,
the
weeded
sorting
out.
Chair.
And so finally there's one that has all the attributes of being the Kohen Gadol.
I don't think so. I think that's
doesn't
a merit based.
That's what I was gonna
job.
Say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
so. So you have to meet the other things.
Yes.
Do a really good offering.
It's not a popularity contest.
And it's not an inherited
choosing of the Pope.
Well, Kohen.
Well, but I'm just that's the general category, but the Kohen Gadol is not
like the son of the Kohen could have a son that's, you know, epileptic or something.
But you're right, and you're Kohen Gadol for life.
Mm-hmm. Like a Supreme Court judge.
It's an interesting thing to think about. Mm-hmm. So Kimchit, a famous woman in the Talmud, who merited to have 7 sons who are Kohanim Gdolim.
Wow.
So they go to her and they ask, what was your merit? And she said, the rafters of my house never saw my hair. So, okay, so that's the what story, okay? But, so she's figured, wow, you all said, wow, 7 Kohanim Gdolim. Wow, what does that mean? She buried 6 sons is what it means.
Yeah.
You're Kohen Gadol for life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, yeah. That's bad.
Right.
That's bad. That's really bad.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course, that probably was also not all that unusual.
Unfortunately. But as adults,
I mean, if you live,
as adults it's unusual.
But adults
they must
were,
have been adults.
But adults
they
how
been,
old,
right.
though? 20s, maybe.
I was going to say, wait, is there a minimum age? What's the
probably,
age
probably, I don't
eligible?
Know. That's a good question.
Well, didn't they say something about 20 or 25 that we were talking about?
I'm
but
sure
maybe that was
can
something
ask it on
else.
Their voice question. Siri knows.
You think Siri knows that? I doubt
totally.
It.
What is the, I'm serious. My husband now has it on the Android, and it's amazing.
Well, and
my
nephew
complete sentences. He
my
asked,
nephew
what
likes
is flannel?
The Android better.
And he answered the whole thing. It didn't even bring up a website. Sometimes it just brings up a website,
yeah.
But sometimes it says, flannel is a cloth made of cotton that's brushed on one side to make it extra fluffy and soft. what? Yeah. You were programmed with that answer? Like, how many answers are you programmed with? You know?
My nephew says verbal Google search is better than
it's
Siri.
It's great. Yeah, yeah. So, just learning how to use it. But I'm sure it would say what the minimum age if you'd ask.
So, in this time, do you think that people had egos like we have now?
Oh my gosh, yes. Oh my gosh, yes. Absolutely. Yes.
Otherwise, we wouldn't
nature.
Worry about pretty Kohani.
Right. Well, no, but I'm saying that, like, the idea of being sort of humiliated by, like,
a black.
In black. And
oh, yeah.
That would be bad. Absolutely.
So, hopefully, you're maybe not humiliated by that. I don't think it's meant necessarily to humiliate, but rather to delineate publicly.
Right.
So I'm sure there was a level of humiliation or surprise.
Well, if you'd gone around saying you were a Kohen.
Humiliation.
But if you went around saying you were a Kohen and all of a sudden they evaluate you and they say, well, oh, no, you're really not.
Right. But it's really been in the last 60 to 70 years, or maybe even less, that we've become so sensitive.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. You
do you think?
I think human nature.
PC thing. I'm sorry.
Oh,
folks.
PC for sure. No, that's, PC is new, but sensitive nature is not.
I think.
Well,
I
of course
agree.
We have a certain amount, but I don't remember being insulted by hardly anything that happened in the 50s. And today, if those same things happen when you see a movie, even from the 1950s, which reflected that period of time, we go, boy, you couldn't get away with that today, because everybody's feelings are laying right on the top of their skin.
That's totally true. That's, I mean, we are.
Yeah, but that's
true.
Not. That's, I think not, that's. Yeah. A, I think to me, that's a little bit of a different issue.
Well, I think that they expected this. I think that they knew they were raised.
I think there was more of that.
Well, maybe.
Just like
there
we do expect them. To like today, we don't let kids fail.
Yeah.
You know, or you can't
helicopter
flunk a.
Parent.
Yeah, you can't flunk a grade or flunk a test. You know, I saw then
I
and now.
That,
then with a kid with a bad report card, and the parent holding it, saying, looking at the child, "What is the meaning of this?" And now the parent's holding the bad report
the
card, looking at the teacher.
Not
saying,
that you,
not that
a Kohen would want to be, you know, segregated out. It's not something that you want. But when it happens, it happens. It's the rules of the game.
Yeah,
it's the rules of the game.
I think that people probably
but
have.
I still don't
and yet,
think that.
There still was ego.
Course,
there still was sensitivity. And for sure, I do. My understanding in terms of history is that there was a little bit, depending on the time, and it was corruption, but it did exist, that there was sometimes a sort of a popularity contest in terms of
who
got
elected
to be what. And for sure, I know enough. I mean, I can't tell you the times, but when I was learning history well to be able to teach it to Jewish University, I know that for sure, I'm sure in Israel too, but for sure in Bavel, there are different times, a whole different sect started. Was it the Karaites that got started?
Karaites.
I think so. The Karaites got started because the head of the Karaites, his brother was chosen to be the head of the yeshiva and not him. Mm-hmm. And he thought he should be, so he went off and started
his
own thing.
So that's gotta be.
Yeah, so starting your own breakaway shuls and shtiebels, and that's old.
Sunni and Shiite were established basically
long
the
time
same
ago.
Way. Whoever, that there were favorites of Muhammad. And the ones that were his right-hand men around him that didn't get chosen formed another sect.
Okay, I'll show you.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I think that's
we don't buy who was chosen to replace.
And they hate each other.
And right.
Oh, my God.
Right.
So much ego and corruption, maybe the temple would still stand.
During Roman days, you bought and sold the Kohen Gadol.
There whoever was some of that. And it's amazing to me that there was that, because the Kohen Gadol, purchased or not, popularity contest or not, if you weren't kosher when you went into the Kadosh Kadoshim on Yom Kippur, they tied a rope around you in case you died. Which people did, right? And then they'd have to pull them out dead.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm. So
I heard that.
What are you thinking? Mm-hmm. like you only have, like let's say you get chosen the day after, so you have a year to serve. But
it's just an interesting concept, all of this. You know, like, so if you think about, like, so if you spoke Lashon Hara, you know, and then you'd show up with Tzaraat, right? So it's a very, it's, I guess it's just a different way that people were living. I guess there are frailties and our problems were more of, it was, I guess it maybe, what I'm, maybe not humiliating, but less personal. Like, I'm just trying to think about, like, if you have these miracles and you're part of this time, So what is the characteristic? Like, I can't imagine any of us today. Can you, if I can mute all and said, okay, just, I just want you all to know, last night I was speaking Lashon Hara. You know, I just, right. it's very private. Right. Everything's very, but if you're living in a time where you're living with God, how different is it?
Very different.
Yeah. So we have an ego, mm-hmm. okay? We even have Moshe who says, like, okay, I cannot be the one, because that's where his ego is, mm-hmm. right? Not me, right? But at the same time, it just seems like such a different way. And today, if this were us, can you imagine if we were, like, broadcasting our sins and our...
Right.
Right? It wouldn't happen.
Right. I mean, even the thought of having to... Can you imagine today... going into the marketplace saying, I need to buy a sin offering.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You're going to tell the market guy that?
Right. At pizza.
Right. You know?
Right. Right. It just is, you know, it's just an right. interesting thing.
It is.
So we think about, like, the person who's wearing the black, and we're all like, ooh,
right.
ooh, how tough. But how's he living with that? Like, is it more of a normal sort of, he's like normalized to, we all
well,
have
I think
our
he
things.
Goes out into the community after that.
Yeah, and then
yeah,
he does.
Out just, yeah.
No, that's not forever. It's not
just
a red letter.
It's not like a, yeah,
out
it's not
of
like
the temple
a,
he has to wear
scarlet
letter.
It's not like a scarlet
right.
letter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the scarlet letter. No, he doesn't
no, it's
have
just,
to wear
he just yeah. has to leave
no, I think
the
he's
temple.
Just, I think it's just a public exit that, you know, as I would imagine it's ceremonial, and for him too, to make the break.
Severing,
yeah,
right.
to make the break. I am not a Kohen.
Right.
And walk out knowing that.
I'm not a Kohen Gadol.
No,
no this was not a Kohen.
Kohen.
This is the...
Altogether. This is when you're being checked out your lineage to see if you're a Kohen.
Oh, the lineage. That's right.
The lineage.
That's
right.
Right.
Not
but
a Kohen.
Is it the same thing if you have a defect? Do they send you out the same
No, way? Remember
Didn't
it said
that.
If you have
no.
a defect.
Say that, did it?
No, no,
it
because you're only checked for defect after your lineage is okay.
Right.
So, yeah.
If you have a defect, I guess... Oh, then you can be a
then you can still
a wood,
then you
worm,
could be
a
the wood shorter
checker.
The wood shorter
right. right right
check the broccoli
oh check. I had to throw away a whole bag last week I hardly ever find bugs so this is like all infested oh my
ooh,
goodness
ooh.
Yeah okay so keep checking even if you don't find it it's easy to get lazy if it's usually clean
yes you need those reminders
yeah mm-hmm.
there
yeah.
are bugs
yeah there are yeah. When we put it in the boiling water, they just floated to the top, and there were so many.
Ooh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Ooh. Yeah.
Well, this time of year, maybe, too.
No, this time of year should be better.
I have had so many bugs on my plants, it's unbelievable.
Really?
I was out cleaning my garden, and, I mean, my flowers just were covered. I saw all these ladybugs, and I'm like, what are the ladybugs doing here? And then I looked more closely, and there were aphid-type things all over. Yes.
Wow.
Just, you know, ones that are still alive. Right. I mean, so, you know, daisies and some hardy type ones. So, that was pretty strange.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 277. The Kohen with a blemishing defect is not to enter the Holy Temple. So,
where are you?
277.
Page 225.
So, Kohen with a blemish is not enter the Heichal.
Master's book.
The temple palace, right? Oh, yeah, sorry.
Esther. Do I have the same page?
277.
Do I have the same
page
number?
That's
interesting, the way they do that.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, that's good.
I
good.
I didn't know that.
Then that means they didn't retypeset it, right?
Apparently.
when they,
it's a different
when they reprinted, yeah.
The print's bigger.
My book is bigger.
Your book is quite a book, but it has the same number of volumes.
Five.
Yeah,
okay, so it's the same.
So
they just didn't reprint it. I mean,
they just made it, yeah. So the type really can't be. The book is bigger. The book is bigger than the type.
Moving on.
Moving on, right.
Obviously, some people do.
I'm trying to say paper.
Physical makes a difference. Okay. So that's, let's see. So he can't go into, now I was trying to figure out, does this mean he can't go in anywhere, like where I could go in? So, because this
anywhere
is not
within its area to the altar.
But anywhere within the altar area. But
The Heichal. It says temple palace.
There's
so I think that's just the place where the Kohanim can enter.
Okay.
So not can he just not do service, but he can't go into anywhere there. He could only go into where I could go in, I think.
Maybe like the
is
general.
What it's saying, into the Ezrat Nashim. The Ezrat Nashim was for men too. But that was it should be really the Ezrat Anashim, because that's where everybody went who couldn't go further. So the plain guy place, the regular people place. It seems like he's allowed to go there. But not further into where the Kohen, where Kohanim could go. so the third paragraph down, as the laws of the precept, i.e. what the blemishes are, we already discussed. And because of those blemishes that are listed in 275, that's where he can't go in. And he gave the location, the earlier place. Now, the Ramban of Blessed Memory wrote that we ought not to reckon this injunction in the list of negative precepts. For the ban on a blemish demands entering the Heichal, and so, too, on those with overgrown hair or torn clothing. Remember we learned about this? Mm-hmm. And those intoxicated is no more than a higher standard set. So he says it's not actually a mitzvah.
It's just the...
So I guess he takes issue with the other ones, too.
Well, it said back here...
The Ramban.
Yeah,
it takes issue with, because we had a mitzvah of a Kohen with grown hair not going in.
Oh, you're saying those, not these
those.
Ones about the blemish.
Right, this is different, right?
Gotcha.
So I'm saying the Ramban probably takes issue, and I did not look
about
that
the torn hair and
about the torn clothing and the overgrown hair, and also intoxicated. So it's interesting. I learned a little bit yesterday about intoxicated. So you can't. I don't know about going into the temple, but in terms of davening and davening from the amud. How intoxicated can you be, right? So the question comes up practically when none of us can think of it, right? I'll just give you star points for cultural awareness if you can. When does this question come up on a regular basis?
Purim.
Yeah.
Simchas
Shabbos.
Why on Shabbos?
Because
of the Kiddush Club.
Right.
So when they break for Kiddush Club and Kriyas HaTorah, and they have one, two, or three shots, and then daven musaf after that, and one of them is davening from the amud. How many shots can you have before you can't daven from the amud for musaf after Kiddush Club and Kriyas HaTorah?
Well, you know, you're not even supposed to say, you're not even supposed to bless your children before you have Kiddush. Excuse me.
After.
You're supposed to
right.
bless your
before
children
you have
before you have Kiddush.
Right.
So, I mean, and that would just be like... I mean,
a little bit, right.
One would... I mean, I'm sure that the way that was defined was Kiddush a long time ago may have been one, two, or three as well. So if you...
Are you saying that you your understanding is, have you learned that you bench your children before Kiddush so that you won't be drunk when you're benching them?
Exactly, I have.
That's interesting. Mm.
Huh.
From whom?
I'm just curious.
I cannot remember, but a reliable source?
I'm sure. I just never heard that before. That's fascinating.
Well, but it makes sense.
I mean, I'm very, thanks for the input.
Yeah.
Never mind. Thanks for the input.
Yeah.
It comes, you know?
No, I mean, because there's so many different ways. You don't have to take it all for yourself.
But it's sort of logical. I mean, it's sort of...
Well, I've always thought...
I mean, that makes sense.
I never heard that before, though.
You didn't do it when you came home after shul before you start your meal. You probably would forget. That's probably why
you could do that also.
It's interesting because we personally, but not based on anything, I'll make that very clear, as Bali Tshuva / Gerim and a family, we made up our own thing. But we bench after Kiddush because that's when everybody's washing. We bless the,
bless the children
after Kiddush because that's when everybody's washing.
So that way, we're all standing up anyway.
But my husband will then will give anybody a bracha who wants, because there's plenty of people at our table who don't have parents to bless them, whether because they're not from or they're not alive or whatever it is.
Right.
So my husband will bless anyone. So they all just line up in front of him. So they get a blessing, and then if they're my kid, they come kiss my hands and thank me for what I've done during the week. That's a custom. And then I learned from Rabbi Pesach Kron, but that is a custom to, after you get the bracha, give a kiss to your mother, kiss her hands, and then they wash. So, and then our guests don't kiss my hands, they just get their blessing and go wash. But that's when we do it. But I never heard to, I mean, I see that most people do it before Kiddush, but I never heard that's because of being drunk. Or
the possibility.
Or potentially.
You're about to drink, and you don't want to be like, you know, woozy and blessing your children.
Interesting. So I never heard that. That's fascinating. I'll look into that. That's curious.
Well, because I mean, this would...
I was going to say this is a bit consistent.
So you can't go in and talk. So it turns out that the classic expression of intoxication I learned yesterday is drunk like Lot.
Uh-huh.
Why drunk
that
like
occurred.
Lot
that
and not
occurred.
Drunk like Noah? Right? They're both drunk.
Yeah, right.
And they were both so drunk... Right? Lot was so drunk that his girls had their way with him and he didn't know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Noah was so drunk that his son castrated him and he didn't know. Right? So he didn't even wake up from his drunken stupor for that. Right? So he was very, very drunk. So, and I would think that's more drunk, really, than Lot.
Wow.
Why isn't it drunk like Noah?
Right.
And why is Noah not taken to as big an account as Lot was for the drunkenness? So it's interesting. So one of the reasons is Noah's drunkenness was his depression. Part of it was in response to his depression over realizing that God really did destroy the world. And
except for us.
He really didn't, and Noah really did fail to save anyone. He did not daven for the rest of the world to be saved or for the flood not to be brought.
Right. He just went along with it.
He just went along with it. And once he got out of the ark and saw actually what happened,
the destruction
it was incredible, and he was depressed because of it and got drunk because of that. Okay, so that's one thing. That's one piece. Mm-hmm. As opposed to Lot, who also got drunk in the wake of destruction of his world. Right? However, what was the difference between the two? And I think this is Talmudic. I learned this from Rabbi Yoel Unger. The difference between the two was Lot had more responsibility than Noah, because Lot's daughters weren't married and Noah's sons were. Mm. So to bring yourself to the point of inebriation when you still have such a responsibility on your shoulders that you can't function is not okay when you have that level of responsibility. It's one thing after you've fulfilled your basic responsibilities to take time out. But when you're right in the midst of responsibility, apparently, it's not okay.
So maybe that's the children thing.
So they could be.
That's where that, because you should be responsible for your children and then risk getting drunk. Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's interesting. Now, I did hear one confusion. I just realized what it was. I said benching your children. So bench means bless. It doesn't just mean Birkat Hamazon. So we usually say benching when we say Birkat HaMazon, where I need to bench. But you bench lecht, that's lighting candles. And you bench your children. And you, benching is giving, is saying a blessing, doing something that's a blessing, right? So just so you know in terms of vocabulary. Anyway, so that's interesting to not bless the children. I'll have to look into that. Okay, so it seems like Ramban would have taken issue with these three things. Also, not going with grown hair, torn clothing, or being intoxicated. He is holding that these are a higher standard rather than a negative mitzvah that one would be transgressing, that they would be going against decorum, but not against the Torah, to enter thusly. And so he would include that as decorum rather than Torah, the Ramban.
It's in addition to the other blemishes.
No, that's something different.
No, so here is saying the blemishing defect, he can't even enter it. So the Ramban is saying he disagrees, that this would not be a negative mitzvah. The Rambam holds it is, which is how the Sefer Chinuch goes. He counts according to the Sefer, Chinuch counts according to the Rambam. Whereas the Ramban is disagreeing here. So he's just bringing the disagreement, but he doesn't count according to his disagreement.
Entering.
It's interesting. Okay.
There's no more than a higher standard.
Right. So, and he writes more about it where we discussed it earlier in Mitzvah 149. He just is referring back to where he discussed about the person with the overgrown hair.
Right.
So the mitzvah of not going with overgrown hair is Mitzvah 149, and he discusses the machloket with the Ramban at that point. Okay. 278. That a ritually unclean Kohen is forbidden to serve at the Holy Temple. Okay, this is outside of what we're... So we were just doing blemishes.
This is ritually.
This is different. This is Tumah. So, and this makes much more sense to us, or maybe not. We don't really know that much about Tumah and Tara that it should make sense. But we could see that this is a state that you enter and exit, and we're already used to... We have kept ourselves used to understanding Tumah and Tara by washing our hands and a few other things that we do to remind us that Tumah and Tara exists in our lives. Okay, so that a Kohen should not serve at the sanctuary while he is ritually unclean, for it is stated that they should keep apart from the holy things of the Israelites and not profane my holy name. Meaning that if he does come close to that, he does profane. He's mechal et shem kodshi, right? It says, be careful, take care from the holy things of the Bnei Yisrael. V'lo yichalalu et shem kadshi, and do not desecrate my holy name. Do not profane it by touching it. So it creates a chilul Hashem to come into that, to come to contact with the holy things, kadshim, if you're tummy. And the sages of blessed memory taught in chapter 9 of the Talmud tractate Sanhedrin, how do we derive that if a defiled Kohen served in the sanctuary, he incurs a death penalty?
Yeah, no kidding.
I.e. death at heaven's hands. That's not something that an earthly court does.
Does.
No, so it means he'll probably die young, Right, Hashem will take him, whatever that is. Car accident, falling off a cliff, mistake in something, you know, tripping and falling on a rock and getting that internal injury and dying from it. Because it is written, how do we know that? Because it's written, speak to Aaron and his sons, that they should keep apart from the holy thing of the Israelites and not profane, and is written elsewhere, and they shall die thereby when they profane it.
So Aaron's sons, they died because they brought a strange offering. Does that connote Tuma?
No. So this is a separate thing, because here the Aaron, speak to Aaron and his sons, meaning Aaron and his descendants, this is the commandment to Aaron. This is commanding all the Kohanim. This is not specifically speaking about those two that did die. But we do learn from those two that die. And we learn that we're not allowed to just make up our own ceremonies and do what we feel like, even if it seems holy and even if it seems very close to what's holy. I read a whole long article that I don't know, Laura, if you were on this email exchange. It was a small group of the East Side community and me on this. Somebody sent out an article about women's Torah readings on Simchas Torah. So a Rabbi Brody, I'm not sure where he's from, objected to them. He is the Rabbi Emeritus of a Young Israel temple, I think in Atlanta, maybe. Anyway, he's the Rabbi Emeritus. His shul that he's Rabbi Emeritus of, the current rabbi, permitted a woman's Torah reading on Simchas Torah without blessings. So according to halacha, right? And he objects to it. And he writes why. So what he says is, what those women were doing is mitzvah mockery, in a way. Because it's not a mitzvah. Which you know by the fact that they didn't say blessing on it. So what they're doing is setting up, not mitzvah mockery, mitzvah mimicry. That's what I wrote. Mitzvah mimicry. That's what I meant to say. They're mimicking a mitzvah by calling people up, by having them read from it.
Actually
reading from the Sefer Torah. Calling people up, not saying a blessing, which proves that everybody agrees it's not a mitzvah, right? Calling them up and reading from it. She says, here you're mimicking a mitzvah, when in the next room where the men are reading, it is a mitzvah. And it's better that the women should be engaged in hearing according to the mitzvah rather than in doing what they feel like doing. So the question is then, so that was the threat. That's what he was saying. And then somebody sent another article saying it really has to do, he started that article quoting a few different people saying, finally we've gotten to the time where the absence of a Y chromosome doesn't keep a woman out from, you know, X, Y, and Z in Judaism. And another article that said, you know, finally it's a time when women, just because they're missing male parts, doesn't mean they can't be, you know, today they can be a judge, but they can't be a dayan, they can have a PhD, but they can't render a halachic decision, you know, and so it's time for us to catch up. So what this person was saying, he started out by quoting those two things, but then was saying that, in fact, Judaism does view people differently, does view differences in gender, there is different halacha because of it, and we have a mesorah. And it's not about gender equality. It's about how do we each have our own pathway to connection with Hashem. And there's a Torah that guides us in that. And so if it's about just creating gender equality, so then you can step outside of halacha. But if you want to be inside halacha, then there's a way to do that. So why was I saying all this?
Can I just ask you, did they say anything about, what about reading with a blessing, except for the Boruchu?
Oh,
which
reading
is
with
what
a blessing.
Did,
okay,
which is
so
what
mitzvah,
we did.
Right. So what he did say was that for Megillas Esther,
you can,
because that is a mitzvah. The mitzvah of hearing it is fulfilled by women reading it for women.
Bye.
Bye.
Susan.
Have a great week. So the mitzvah is fulfilled. So that's okay, because then you're actually doing the mitzvah. But in the case where you're not doing the mitzvah, but rather substituting, it's not.
But what if you do say the bracha?
It's not still not a mitzvah. Then you're just saying a bracha.
And read the Torah.
And reading the Torah. You're not doing a mitzvah. Now you're saying a bracha levatella. If you're saying the bracha when it's not according to halacha. You know, in a way it's like
Aaron.
Saying,
like Aaron giving the...
Right. Oh, that's, thank you. That's where I was going with the whole thing. Right. So what if you said, love an esrog. Very nice. But it's so pointy, that lulav. I like something more graceful. You know, so I'm going to...
Pussy willows.
I'm going to do pussy willows. Mm-hmm. It's so much prettier, softer, lovely. I don't need that pointy thing that looks like a sword. I'm putting pussy willows. Okay, so now you have your four species. Still four species, right? And Esrog is so expensive. Let's just go with 11. So you still have your four species, right? You can't make a bracha on that. And if you are making a bracha, for even shaking it without a bracha, it's nothing. You're just mimicking a mitzvah. But it's nothing. It's not a mitzvah. It's just picking up four things and moving it around. You're accomplishing nothing. Not spiritually, not physically, not mystically. Nothing. Right? It's nothing. If you'd make a bracha on that, you'd be transgressing. Right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So the question is, what's the halacha? And that we do have a halacha. So when his sons made up that extra ceremony, even though it was very close to a real ceremony, they were making stuff up out of whole cloth. And that's where they got, I mean, it was a very harsh punishment. But that's where Hashem said, no, I'm sorry. There's a Torah, and you stepped outside of it. And because you are so prominent, and because you did it so publicly, we have to make a very clear statement that it's not okay. So it's a question. I mean, I really think, you know, all these creating new ceremony, I think there's a place for some. But the truth is we have, and that would be with halachic guidance, but the truth is we have so much, we have to figure out what does belong to us and how can we connect through it. And it doesn't mean that women don't have a place. For sure they do, but not so much in the synagogue. That's the truth. You know, they don't have a big place in the synagogue. They are behind a curtain.
So I just have a question. The this letter that you're referring to, the rabbi emeritus, what shul, what is the denomination of the shul?
Orthodox.
So in Orthodox shul, women do...
In this Orthodox synagogue...
Busy morning.
Okay. In this Orthodox synagogue, in that synagogue, they did it. But they tried to do it according to the Jewish law, meaning they had in a separate room where men couldn't hear them singing or laning. It was just women, and they didn't say a blessing. But they did divide up the Torah portion, and they did have women called up by their name and then read from it, where women prepared the reading, so they got to read from the Torah. So there are people trying to do that kind of thing, and some people would say that's great advances, and some people would say that's taking people away from Torah. So it's a real challenge, because women are yearning for more expression, and there are kosher ways to do it, and there are non-kosher ways to do it, and sometimes the lines are very fuzzy. And that's where you really do have to have halachic guidance guiding you as to what's okay and what's not. It's interesting just thinking about, you've been inside Beis Yisrael, and my husband likes to affectionately refer to it, you know, that's the new Haredi minyan on the east side. My husband calls it Beth Israel, because that's Beis Yisrael. Just as a joke.
The one at, so the, one going at, to Beth at the TRI today? Building.
Right, yeah.
It's pretty Haredi.
Right. No, it is Haredi, but the joke is Beth Israel instead of Beis Yisrael. Anyway, so you walk in there, so they have a very interesting machitza, where the women can see through very clearly. But because of the way the fabric is and the lighting is, the men can't see back the other way. So it's kind of nice that the women can see everything that's going on, and men can't see. So it's the men that can't see, it's not the women that can't see. The mechitza is not meant to keep the men out of the women's sight. It's meant to keep the women out of the men's sight. And that goes back to this other principle of distraction, right? It's not that men can't cause themselves to not be distracted. A lot of times we'll say, in terms of tznias, a lot of women get angry about tznias and say, "What? Why do I have to take my, you know, responsibility for his thoughts? You know, let him not look and not think." Okay, he could do that. But it takes a lot of effort to not look and not think.
He can't do that.
Or he can't do that, right? Or he can't. But a lot of people can, but it uses up, it does use up energy, and then you don't have that energy available for other things. That's the truth. You know, there's only so much you can do. So if you put in that extra distracting thing, so it's distracting for the men to see the women. It's not distracting for the women in general to see the men. So the women, no problem. The women, and in fact, I find it a little distracting to not be able to see anything that's going on. I want to see them reading the Torah.
I hate that when you can't see them.
Yeah, I don't like being behind something where you can't see anything and you just really feel like you're in a separate room altogether. So I find that distracting. I'm not part of the group. I don't have a problem not being called to the Torah, but I do have a problem not being able to see anything that's going on. That's a problem for me. So just makes it harder to pay attention.
Well, you wonder if that line had been drawn differently, that the yearning to read the Torah wouldn't be as great if you could be a better part of the community where you could see what was going on.
I I hear the question.
Move that, or it's just
I hear the question,
anyway.
But I don't think so, because the reading of the Torah began in conservative synagogues where women and men were sitting together long before women started to read. Right, long before women were called up and long before they started to read, they were sitting together. So that it's not because of that, I would say.
Yeah, that's true.
That's probably true.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true.
I think it's just because women have dropped out of touch with their mitzvot, with lesser observance, so there's lesser connection.
That's funny because, you know, I mean, I chair the ritual committee at BMHBJ, and we're working with, you know, three minions trying to square it all up. And the women who most want to read are the women who have moved more to, more religiously.
Uh-huh. But you know, they're the ones. There's a connection, I think, between my guess is that looking at them, they're probably very bright. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sort of a missed step in that it's sort of I have a lot of information, but I may not be as deep in my religious practice, and my intellect connects me with that which is more intellectual, which is reading and preparing for the Torah reading. I mean, I used to read and prepare for the Torah reading, and there's nothing real spiritual about that. That's just a lot of work. Go back and forth, back and forth. What was that note? Okay, did I remember it? Will someone check me? And it's not a spiritual pursuit. It's an intellectual pursuit.
That's interesting.
I mean, I think it'd be interesting to hear different women.
But it's the women that are there every week, which is not a traditional women's role,
right?
You know, it is the women that are in shul every week.
Right. It's just fascinating.
It is.
I mean, I went to one of the Kol Nashim. You could say Alava Shalom on the conference, whatever it was. But went to one of them. And it's so interesting because they really experimented with so many different prayer. Practices, you know, sometimes having it separate, not never wanting to call it Reform, Conservative, or Orthodox, giving it different fruit names, giving it different names of different, whatever it would be, different names to have the Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, a musical one, a parallel one, an interactive one. And then they, towards the last few years, they really wanted everybody together, and they tried to create a service where everybody could be in the same room. So that worked out okay. And Ellen and I stepped out, along, I think, with maybe one or two other women. We stepped out for the Torah reading. But Ellen commented to me, she said, you know, what's so weird for me is that I trained most of these women how to lane.
Right? It's true. She did.
So I think it still is interesting. But what I'm saying is it's interesting to think about the progress of somebody spiritually and seeing that as a place where people do move through often. That enjoyment of that, the feeling so spiritual because of that.
Well, we confuse what we want.
I think so.
We confuse it because we think that because men do it, that therefore it's somehow a goal. Even though, you know, it's not my goal to wear a suit and tie, okay? But we somehow, we've aspired as a race of women.
Well, as Western women, we've aspired, we have a definition of equality that includes you can do everything that everybody does. So I found that at one of the conferences also, I think probably at the final Kol Nashim, somebody brought a pair of tefillin. Were you guys there for that? Mm-hmm. Somebody brought a pair of tefillin, and on Sunday, after a shacharit, she helped whoever wanted to put them on. And so I watched from the corner a little bit, and so there were quite a few women who were just thrilled to put them on. They were so excited, but I feel like the excitement was about crossing boundaries, not about achieving a spiritual practice that they had yearned to do. Because a lot of them were women who don't keep other mitzvahs. So I could see if you're somebody who's like, as full as a pomegranate with mitzvahs, you know, super careful in tzniut and lashon hara and guarding your anger and learning and davening with kavana and really being careful in your life in every way, and you're yearning for an additional spiritual avenue, I could see that person asking a shaila and perhaps being permitted to do that additional spiritual thing. But when you're somebody who doesn't keep kosher and doesn't daven on a regular basis but you know, enjoys doing Shabbat once in a while and feels very Jewish and does Jewish stuff, and you're thrilled putting on tefillin, to me that's not a thrill of the spiritual.
It's a thrill
of the forbidden.
It's interesting that you mentioned that one. I had a young woman staying with me 4 years ago who was working on the campaign and the convention
I remember
here.
That, yeah.
And, you know, an interesting woman who was from. Mm-hmm. I mean, she would consider herself mm-hmm. from. And, you know, late to fill in every day. And she said that she'd done it since her bat mitzvah, and she was now a sophomore, junior in college, and she'd never missed a day. And she said that, you know, once you accept that obligation, she said, you know what? It is no longer spiritual. It is a pain in the tushy.
Right.
You know, to get up, you know, she had to be at work at 7:30 anyway.
She has children.
And, yeah.
Nursing.
Yeah.
And filling, you know.
But she was, you know, she felt like once she'd taken on this obligation that, you know.
The problem is you can't say to anybody,
you know, that
any of this because people are inherently not accepting the Torah as our tool. They're saying, oh, this is a great idea, and I'll choose the things that I've learned about. But in general, when somebody is choosing instead to put on tefillin and not keep kosher, then they're dismissing. They're not able.
Right.
They're not
right.
saying, you know what, all of it's important to me. I'm not at that place yet. They're saying, never mind that. I'm going to do this instead because for whatever reason. And so there's an inherent gap.
Right.
And so you can't argue this because they'll say, well, that's because that's important to you. The laws of kosher are not even germane anymore. And you're like, okay, well, that, you know, we're...
Really?
It sounds like you've had some conversations like that.
Save all my money.
I'll end with a quick conversation I had with Donnie, right? So Donnie and I are both trying to lose a little weight, and he, being an 18-year-old male, is having greater success than me. He said, Ima, said, you could be as successful as me. All you have to do is be an 18-year-old male. I said, well, 18's really not under my control at this point. He said, well, being male is. I said, I said, I'm really, you know, I'm not really interested in being a man. I love being a woman. I love, you know, doing a women's mitzvah. I said, I'm not really into putting on tefillin every day. So he looked at me and said, what, you're too lazy to serve Hashem as a man?
Donnie gets the last word.
Right, yeah, can you just say one sentence? What was the relationship in this with 278?
Okay, so I wanted to, what's the relationship is just, we're continuing learning about Kohanim, and I want to get this mitzvah in. There's not a clear relationship between 278 and the other three, which have to do with the blemish.
Okay.
It's just that the next group is going to be about eating truma.
Oh, okay, so it was about...
It's about sticking this mitzvah in with that group so that I can start the next group on truma and what that is.
Right, but why were we talking about... being tahor. Why are we talking about that?
Why are we talking about tuma and tahara?
Yeah.
So here, a ritually unclean kohen is forbidden to serve at the holy temple.
From that part. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So he's not permitted.
Okay.
And so you'll see also that kohanim, does it say it in this one or the next one, that a kohen who's not well versed in the laws of tuma and tahara can't serve either. We talked about before, maybe it's in a later one, I'm not sure where it says that. We talked about before that the definition of anam haaretz, which is not today's definition. Am haaretz.
Uh-huh.
Amaretz, we call it amaretz, or amaretzim, we say in plural in fast Ashkenazi Hebrew, amaretzim.
Okay.
Or am haaretz, that's what it's called, am haaretz. Am haaretz, even though am is nation, it refers singularly to an individual person who's ignorant. So it means an ignoramus. And am haaretz is the opposite of a talmud chacham.
Okay.
So I'll give you, for instance, halachically where we would apply that. A kohen am haaretz, a kohen's supposed to get kavod, we learned last week, right? But an am haaretz gets less kavod than a talmud chacham, right? So a talmud chacham mamzer gets more kavod than an am haaretz kohen. Because what you worked for yourself takes precedence over your birth order, right? So even if you're a mamzer, bad birth, but you're a talmud chacham, you've earned yourself into the kavod level that an am haaretz kohen is out of, okay? So, but kohen, but really the technical definition of am haaretz, technically, is somebody who does not know the laws of tuma and tahara. Not just an ignoramus. So today we use it for ignoramus. It means anybody who's not learned, right? But really, technically, it means somebody who does not know the laws of Tumah and Tahara carefully. So an Am Ha'aretz Kohen is a big problem, and an Am Ha'aretz Kohen is not allowed to serve. Because we assume about him that he's not, so not versed that he can't take care of himself to make sure that he is Tahor. Right? He doesn't have enough knowledge to be able to be relied upon to because it's something you can only testify about yourself. Right? And thinking about the laws of Nida, right? A wife is completely relied upon. It's nobody checks up on her. It's 100% her to testify to the fact that she's tahor or tameh, which means she has to learn enough halacha to know when to say she's tahor or tameh or when to ask a shayla.
Right.
But she's completely relied upon for that. If she was totally ignorant, you would not be able to rely on her for that. Same thing with a kohen. Right. So if a kohen is ignorant of the laws of Tumah and Tahara, he can't serve because you can't trust him to know if he's tahor or not. So that comes in here. A ritually unclean kohen is forbidden to serve at the Holy Temple, and therefore a Am Ha'aretz kohen is forbidden to serve.
Okay.
Which he can change that. Both are changeable states.
Uh-huh.
But they would need to be changed before he can serve.
What about somebody who was a woman who maybe has Down syndrome, right? Who is married.
Mm-hmm. Right. That would be a question. I don't know. That would be a very interesting shayla to ask at some point. Hopefully we'll see a wedding like that in our community in the next few years, Bezrat Hashem. And then they'll have to figure out the halacha of that. You know, how does that work?
Well, it used to be, I think, in Second Temple times, Herod's time, that the knowledge level had deteriorated so much in the field of the Kohens that when a Kohen Gadol was picked, that, or he bought his position during those times, that there were actual tests that they put them through, because there were always some who had that knowledge, and if he didn't pass the test, he could not go and serve the temple. But they actually had to test him and see how much knowledge do you have about Tumah and Tahara and all that sort of thing, because the skill level of the Kohens had, you know, was so degraded.
It's interesting. On our rabbinic search, we also tested all of our candidates. You know, we have a few Talmudim Chachamim in our community who are quite significant, who in conversations with them, tested them. You know? Mm-hmm. And then they got together afterwards to discuss how they fared on those tests.
Yes.
You know, but they were not.
It wasn't anything where you're sitting there writing things down,
no.
Or you're saying I'm testing you on this or this. It was just in general conversation.
Yes, and they were tested.
Yeah,
they were tested to know, because you have to be able to access your resources. Like any one of us, we know how to look something up on the internet, but that's not good enough on Shabbos.
Yep, that's right.
You know, you have to know, is that Sefer Torah kosher or not kosher because you just found that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that person, can they have an aliyah or not because you just discovered that? Whatever it is, you have to know all that stuff. So.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, we'll end here.
Very good.
And start the next class.